Board of Supervisors to session. Supervisor Valenzuela, will you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Chaplain Bradley, will you once again set us off on the right foot?
Father, we're grateful to be here this morning to conduct the business of the county. Even as we think about the Pledge of Allegiance, we live in a great country. We know that there are a lot of issues, lots of opinions. But Father, we generally are people of the law and rule of the law. And as the decisions are made, we want to keep that in mind. But Father, the citizens that participate in our government, and we all want to be part of and be positive and be encouraging in all that's going on. Thank you for those who serve us faithfully in the positions that they've been elected to or hired to do the jobs, and we're grateful for their service. And we just give you thanks for all these things. And may today's session go well, and may the decisions be right. And we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you, Chaplain Brown. Just out of practice, Mr. Kiernan or Ms. Davis, anything for the agenda amendments?
We should do roll call and
get that done. Roll call first.
Thank you. Supervisor Haupt?
Here.
Supervisor Kopsa?
Here.
Supervisor Chris?
Present.
Supervisor Ogren?
Present.
And Supervisor Valenzuela?
Here.
And the board will be convening today as the Flood Control and Water Conservation District, and I believe Siskiyou Power Authority, and County Service Area 4, and receives no additional compensation. Now I'm done.
All right. That's perfect. Anything for the agenda, Mr. Kiernan or Ms. Davis?
Yes, I have an urgency item to ask a closed session for flood control. After the posting of the agenda on April 28th, 2022, we were advised of a exposure to litigation for the Flood Control District. And we need to have direction from the board prior to our next board meeting of March 17, 2022. And for that reason, I ask that this be added to the agenda as an urgency item if the board approves by two-thirds vote to do so.
Do I need to convene the Flood Control District?
Yes.
Okay. We will recess as the Board of Supervisors, convene as the Siskiyou Flood Control and Water Conservation District.
Move to approve.
Second. Okay. Motion and a second.
Okay. Director Haupt?
Aye.
Director Kopsa?
Aye.
Director Valenzuela?
Yes.
Director Ogren?
Aye.
And Director Chris?
Aye.
Thank you.
We will recess as the Flood Control and Water Conservation District and reconvene as the Board of Supervisors. Presentations from the public. This time slot is information from the public. No action or discussion will be conducted on matters presented at this time. You will be allowed 3 minutes for your presentation. The chair can extend the time to 5 minutes for appropriate circumstances. Written comments can be presented if so desired by providing a minimum of 7 copies to the clerk. When addressing the board, please state your name for the record prior to providing your comments. Please address the board as a whole to the chair. Comments should be limited to matters within the jurisdiction of the board. I have one public comment in person, Mr. David Raven. Mr. Amon?
Right there it is. Good morning. First off, thank you guys for being here. You know what you do.
Name for the record, please.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Your name, sir, for the record.
There we go. David Raymond.
There you go.
Live in Tennant. I'm on the board there. One of the things, obviously, we were right in the middle of the fire. Our roads are in terrible shape, and I realize that the county's way down the list for you guys. But if we could get material, i.e. gravel, most of our roads are gravel there in Tennant, just the material alone would be significant in an effort for me to be able to take care of some of the back roads in the district itself. Additionally, the Tennant Road, if any of you have been out there recently, is significantly worse than it was, and it was bad before. So anything that we can do towards getting the Tennant Road and materials for our in district area would be significant. And so anything you guys can do for us in that area would be hugely welcome. That's it.
No, thank you, Mr. Raymond.
Yeah, thank you,
thank
guys.
You. Thank you, sir.
Have a good day.
Ms. Davis?
Good morning, Board. Angela Davis, County Administrator. I would just like to take a moment to introduce and present to some our new County Public Information Officer, Courtney. So if you'd like to stand and wave. So we're extremely excited to have her on board, and just wanted to make sure everyone knows that she is here and available, and just wanted to make sure you know who she is.
We'll see what she's got. Come up with 3 minutes of spiel here.
My only spiel is to go like our Facebook page.
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
I actually watched your Facebook page. I take it you're going to be in Tula Lake this evening?
Yes, I will be.
Wow, okay.
So I did meet her personally, and she came down to our chamber event down there, so I think hitting the ground running, so thank you so much for showing up.
Absolutely.
Can I get a last name?
Kreider.
With a K?
Kreider, K-R-E-I-D-E-R.
Thank you very much.
I too had the opportunity to sit down with Courtney last week, and she was present during an interview I did, and thank you for that. It's been kind of a dream with some of the members on this board for quite a long time. To have you on board, I welcome you and thank you for coming. The only question I have is, I saw the Facebook posting too, but is there going to be an official county Facebook page?
So the Siskiyou County page is the official one. We're going through the verification process with Facebook. It won't let you put words like official on those pages until you get verified.
Can we put a link on the county webpage?
I'm also working with Judy on that as well. So it should be on our website, and then any message that you guys have, that will be a way to present that to a public that hopefully reaches more people.
Thank you. I knew I probably wouldn't have to ask those questions, but I did for the general public.
No, it's important. I appreciate it.
To the chair as well. Courtney was with us on the Safe Harbor tour that Supervisor Ogren and I attended here, what, a week or so ago, so it was great having you there, and you could tell by her interaction with the group that she's, as you said, hitting the ground running, so we're glad to have you aboard.
Thank you.
Well, I'll jump in as well. yesterday was a big event here in Wairika for the Siskiyou Crossroads Project, and I don't know how you did it so quickly. But what you managed to pull together and get up on the Facebook page was not only beautiful and well produced, but you made me look pretty good. You know? I don't know how you did it. But everybody that was on that post looked amazing, and the production was great all off your phone. And keep it going, because you're going to make us look really great. Thank you.
Thank you. That's the goal.
You did well.
I appreciate the introduction.
You bet.
Thank you.
Any more public comment? Any online?
Showing none online.
All right. We'll be on the consent agenda.
I'd like to pull 5C.
5C.
Move to approve the remaining.
Seconds if there isn't any.
All right. Motion and second on the consent agenda. Ms. Wendy?
Oh, just making sure there were no others to pull, correct? Okay.
None on this agenda.
All righty. Supervisor Haupt?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobbsack?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yes.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
So to Ms. Nielsen, is there a way, and I'm not trying to hold this up, I know it's been in the process for a long time, but is there a way that we can add a sentence or a phrase that says, essentially, we don't know what could happen on the other side of dam removal, for a sentence that would indicate unrecognized damages, something as a stopgap fill?
So Elizabeth Nielsen, Deputy County Administrator, and at the end of the third paragraph in that letter, we would like to add the sentence, this amount does not include any currently unrecognized impacts, period.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That works.
Perfect.
What concept would you mind maybe saying as occurred in Condit or as other projects have shown this has happened as well? Are you happy with what you got?
Or even if you say post-dam removal, something to that effect. When we say current, I mean...
So I think two things. We do not reference any other dam removal project in this letter, to be specific to this effort and the demands that we're making from KRRC and the state of California. Also, we have addressed potential unrecognized impacts in our various comment letters to FERC, and all of our comment letters to FERC are included as an attachment to this letter.
Good chair.
Yes.
So I support the edit. I think I spoke to you earlier about that from the standpoint of being a project that's of this magnitude that is unprecedented in history. There will be unintended impacts. And I am searching for whatever language, and I think we have it in our filing, that holds the counties and its citizens harmless for unforeseen impacts.
So move to approve with the.
We have a comment.
I'm sorry.
One.
Yeah, I see a comment. Mr. Nick Jocelyn.
Hello, Nick Jocelyn, Mount Shasta, California. I was just going to comment on consent agenda item A. I wanted to say, I think the construction of a fish screen on Park Street is a great project. I'd also just like to caution there are details within Montague Water Conservation District's operations that need to be examined more closely so that unintended consequences can be avoided. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jocelyn.
Anything further public comment by?
No.
So move to approve with that amendment.
Looking at you. Showing a moment.
Do we have a second?
A second.
Second.
Okay. Supervisor Haupt?
Aye.
Supervisor Cobbsack?
Aye.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Chris?
Aye. California Department of Fish and Wildlife, presentation regarding the bears.
My name is Axel Honeycutt. I'm the Siskiyou Unit Biologist for the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, based here in Wairika. I'm responsible for wildlife management activities within the county of Siskiyou. I was asked here today to present on the new bear policy that came out for CDFW that was came out in February 16th, 2022, earlier this year, and supersedes all previous policies, the most recent one being last revised in 2000. Next slide. So today I'm going to go through the core focuses of the policy. The primary focus of the policy in general is to define the main human-bear conflict interactions and situations, the main ones being public safety, depredation or property damage, human-bear conflict, and animal welfare. This policy does not focus on population management, population monitoring, hunting, hunting regulations, or harvest, and so therefore those won't be discussed today in this presentation. The first thing the policy lays out is the department's response, our obligation and commitment to responding to these incidents. You'll see that animal welfare is not on there. That is not because the department is not committed to responding to animal welfare, but just that there isn't a set time constraint. In terms of public safety, our law enforcement division is required to respond to those in a timely manner, which of course is with utmost haste. In terms of non-public safety issues, depredation and conflict issues, wildlife management staff such as myself are required to respond to those within 48 hours of receiving notification of them and at least do an initial assessment of the situation. So I'm going to go through each one of these, explain the definition, and then just explain the response that our department and this policy lays out. So the first is a public safety bear. This is a bear demonstrating aggressive action that has resulted in physical contact with a human, or a bear exhibiting an immediate threat to public health and safety, given the totality of the circumstances. So obviously in this sort of circumstance, our department responds to these incidents with the utmost seriousness, and protection of human life is our agency's foremost consideration.
That's right. Yeah.
Can you define what a threat to human life is?
Sure. Immediate threat refers to a bear that exhibits one or more aggressive behaviors directed towards a person that is not reasonably believed to be due to the presence of the responders, is how the policy defines it.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So as I mentioned, human life is obviously of the utmost importance and is paramount and must always win the day. CEFW Law Enforcement Division and peace officers from any law enforcement agency can take lethal action at any time if they deem a bear a public safety threat. If a public safety bear cannot be immediately located and euthanized by law enforcement officers, then an incident command structure will be established for the duration of the incident until it is resolved. The last note on this is that circumstances where evidence indicates that the initial attack was unprovoked or another attack is unlikely, then our department's assistant chief and regional manager may recommend to our response guidance team that the bear is no longer a safety threat. So the second classification is a depredation bear. This is a bear that is threatening to, damaging, or destroying property for which a revocable depredation permit has been requested and can be issued in accordance with the Fish and Game Code. Property under the definition of Fish and Game Code does also include livestock and pets, I'll note. Next slide. So according to Fish and Game Code 4181, this provides for the issuance of a revocable depredation permit to landowners or tenants who experience property damage by bears, as determined by CDFW. These permits are lethal permits. They allow the tenant or the landowner or property owner, an agent of theirs, or an elected agent, which in most cases is our county trappers through the county Department of Agriculture, to lethally take that individual. This permit may be issued by CDFW after application from an owner or tenant of land or property, but only once satisfactory evidence of damage or destruction is presented. In most cases, this is, we deal with depredations a lot in the county because we do have obviously a significant bear population and a rural area where there is that conflict with people and livestock and property. And most of this can range from chickens being killed or maimed or injured by bears, all the way up to a bear breaking into a house or destroying a vehicle to that extent. In most cases, we deal with this with the individual virtually, where they're able to send us photos over text or email, where we're able to confirm the status of the evidence, confirm that it wasn't there, and confirm the actual damage. In cases where people don't have that ability or that access, we will, of course, do a site visit and go out to them anywhere in the county, anywhere in the state. So the permit is only issued once we get the evidence of destruction. The permit shall contain information of why it was necessary, what efforts were made to solve the problem without lethal measures, and the corrective actions that should be implemented to prevent further occurrence. So during the course of our investigation, we will confirm what preventative measures the person has on their property to begin with. That can be, you know, their husbandry practices, that could be electric fencing, those could be motion sensor lights. People get very creative, so that ranges quite a bit. And we always recommend additional steps that they can take. Again, those could be husbandry practices to implementing actual physical preventative measures. CDFW will determine whether any efforts have been made to solve the problem without lethal action. If not, CDFW will work with the applicant to propose non-lethal measures first as an alternative. The decision authority previously in the former policy lied largely with the unit biologists, people in my position, and our supervisors. Under this new policy, this is at the discretion and decision authority of the environmental program manager or the regional manager, whether a lethal permit may be issued. And maybe just a note here, this policy does not make any changes to the Taking in the Act amendment, which is in the Fish and Game Code section 4181.1A, which allows an owner of livestock or employee of that owner to take immediate action to take a bear encountered in the act of inflicting injury to, molesting, or killing livestock, provided that they reported to our agency within 24 hours and are able to provide a carcass. Next slide. So the third category, and probably the broadest, are conflict bears. The policy describes these as a bear that requires action by the department or the public due to its behavior or its situation. Included in this category are, and I'm going to go through these, no harm, no foul bears, habituated bears, and animal welfare bears. Implicit in this definition is the range of types of conflict bears, and this policy outlines a strategy of flexibility and case-by-case analysis for each of these. So there isn't a set-in-stone response to each of these, but I will go through the outline for each. So first, a no harm, no foul bear is one that strayed into an area where an incident could occur, hasn't engaged in nuisance activity or caused property damage, and may require assistance to return to suitable habitat. So this would be an example of, say, a bear in downtown Margarita. Hasn't done anything, hasn't caused any injury, it's just found itself in a dense human area, and maybe just needs help getting back to bear habitat safely. In this situation, you know, in most cases, we would hope that the bear would return by itself to the wild, but it may be the most sound measurement for us to step in and potentially either capture or trap that bear or chemically immobilize it and then remove it to its situation. In most cases, these tend to resolve themselves in our area just because we're in such a rural area and our community centers or population centers are so small and so close to bear habitat, that usually by the time we get a call about those bears have already wandered back. But there are circumstances with it, which is where we would act. If the policy does also dictate that if we catch a bear to trap or relocate it, we are required to take a DNA sample of that bear. We're required to put a unique ID tag on it, and we're also required to add a do not consume tag to its ear if it is chemically immobilized within 2 weeks or during a hunting season. Just to protect people from potentially ingesting the drugs that we use for chemical immobilization. The decision, again, to whether or not a bear may be trapped, relocated, or captured, again, lies at our regional manager. This category is a habituation bear, or sorry, habituated bear. This is a bear that shows little to no overt reaction to people as a result of being repeatedly exposed to anthropogenic stimuli without substantial consequence. Probably the best definition of this would be as colloquially used as a trash bear, a bear that is used to getting into people's garbage or our attractants that are found on our properties, and it has lost some or all of its fear of people as a result of that. It's constantly getting a positive feedback of, I can come into human space, get a positive reward of food, and not have a negative response from people. So this varies widely, and a great example of this was last year at the Fuller's campsite outside of McLeod, the U.S. Forest Service. First, we had a bear that was coming around the campground. It wasn't being aggressive, but it was definitely habituated to people, and the Forest Service was very worried, and they wanted us to trap and relocate it. Under the previous policy, we were not able to do that, and we had to work with them to mitigate the situation. The first thing we did was try to remove the attractants, or try to remove the things that were causing the bears to come there. So working with the Forest Service to tighten up their ship, you know, they did a full cleaning of the campground, were super strict of enforcing their policies on people and campers that were coming into the ground. That did not work. We considered using non-lethal measures and hazing, but as a result, in the end of the day, we decided to close the campground with Forest Service to prevent any potential conflict with people that could result at elevating this to a higher level, say a public safety bear. So the best outcome in this situation is that the bear returns to its habitat and its natural behavior. In cases where, as I just mentioned, a bear is getting so much positive stimulus, that may not happen. And therefore, we will try to work first through non-lethal corrective measures, attractant management, adding preventative measures, working with property owners and landowners on their husbandry practices if livestock or livestock or animals are present. And again, focusing on non-lethal. If circumstances dictate, and we have tried and exhausted all of those measures, oh, I'm sorry, you can go to the next slide, my apologies. If all of those have been exhausted, all feasible non-lethal options have been exhausted, then these three measures are potentially on the table: relocation, placement, and euthanasia. In the past, our past policy has not laid this out as clear as this one, and this new policy allows for greater flexibility to potentially use these if we have exhausted all non-lethal measures. Placement is the best option. That means potentially taking a bear and putting it into a captive situation, such as a zoo or a rehab center. That is the best situation from the view of the state because it means that we don't have to euthanize the bear, and the bear is completely removed from the situation. If relocation is suggested by the team on the ground, and there is a suitable place to relocate the bear, we may present a plan for relocation. And again, we would do the measures we described before, where we would ear tag the bear, take its samples, and hopefully also put a GPS collar on it to be able to track it as well. That is not in the policy, but just a personal on the ground hope or plan. And if all else fails, then euthanasia may be discussed and be decided by the response guidance team. And that decision is made by our regional manager, again, to euthanize a bear. The last category is an animal welfare bear. This is an orphaned, sick, or injured bear that may require veterinary assistance. So this cub here is a male cub that I picked up in the antelope fire last year, just south of Tennant. Firefighters reported him to us. He was all by himself, no mother, clearly orphaned, and had significant burns on his face and paws. It was decided that we took this bear into rehab. He is still in a rehab center down in Auburn, and he is potentially going to be released later this week with a GPS collar into a suitable wilderness area in eastern Siskiyou and monitored. But this was a case where this bear, it was just really great to see the firefighting teams really latched onto this bear, and I think some of the community of Tennant as well for that fire. But this is a classic situation where we were called in and there was an animal welfare bear. Sorry, next. Just finishing up here. So there's two categories of welfare bears. You have sick and injured, and then you've got orphan cubs. Orphan cubs are yearlings or cubs that obviously don't have a mother associated with them, and under our assessment, are not able to survive in the wild by themselves. We will make an assessment of their level of habituation that they currently have and their health to determine if they are a candidate for rehab and if there is space for rehab. We had two bears in Etna last year that classified for this. The mother was mother had died, we don't know why, but two cubs were reported in an area. We were able to catch those bears. We found a rehab center for them. They were young enough, and we brought them in. Our previous policy had a date and weight restriction, so it was anything before August 1st or under 50 pounds was how we worked that out. This is a bit more flexible, where we're able to potentially help other bears without that restriction of dates in the new policy. And then the last thing is a sick or injured bear. Our department will respond to potentially injured bears, either for motor vehicle collisions, wildfires, as I said. Sometimes there's hunting accidents. We've had several bears with arrows stuck in them. We also have had confirmed cases of encephalitis in the county. Encephalitis is the swelling of the brainstem by a virus or other means. We have, our wildlife health lab has determined that to be either viral or protozoal. We're still investigating it. But we did have several confirmed cases. It does cause the bears to act very tame and show neurological signs. So that is something we are currently working on investigating. But that is something else that we respond to. We consult with our veterinarians in the Wildlife Health Lab, and the decision whether to remove that bear, euthanize it, or put it in a rehab center again falls to our Wildlife Health Lab and our regional manager to make those decisions. And that's all I have as far as presenting the policy. I did also want to note that our department is committed to addressing human-wildlife conflict across the state and has currently hired or is in the process of hiring human-wildlife conflict specialists or biologists. We currently have one in Eureka. We're hiring one down in Redding. And we will have a technician here in Eureka to help cover Siskiyou. Thank you.
Thank you. And go ahead and introduce the rest of your team here.
Yeah, sir.
Yeah. Good morning, supervisors. Good morning, everyone. My name is Sean Fries. I'm actually from the coast. I'm counterpart to Christine Town Jackson and Steve Burton. I oversee the lands and wildlife programs on our coastal units. So good morning, everyone.
Thank you.
Good morning. We can take any questions?
I think we'll have some. Sir, if you just want to... Is that just the two of you?
No, just the two of us.
Oh, just the two. Okay. Have the same color shirt. All right. That's good to have you volunteer there. So now, any questions from board members? So Supervisor Costa?
Sure. So I think the biggest concern has been the extra step in getting a depredation permit when it goes to the regional manager or to the environmental, whatever it was, manager. It's been a problem in the past, you know, getting them, but now this extra step, I think that's what's raised a lot of concerns. So how do you see that working? I think there's some things that are beneficial in the new policy, but I think that's the biggest hang-up is how quick, you know, the response can be.
Sure. So I guess I'll start it off. We all want bears to be safe and healthy. We all want landowners to not have any issues with bears. We will still be able to look at a property on a case-by-case, incident-by-incident basis. And if it's all those feasible non-lethal measures are being implemented by a landowner, then we would be able to move towards a lethal permit. So if somebody's doing all the right things they can be doing, that's still on the table. But our end goal is to make sure non-lethal best management practices, enhanced animal husbandry, all being employed on the property, and that's going to benefit everybody. So it's definitely, the requirements of this policy are still there. We go to a property and there's animal feed available, there's cat food outside, there's barbecues outside, trash is not secured properly. There's a lot of steps that landowner can do to enhance the infrastructure security of his property to keep predators away. I mean, not only bears, but all the other things that are going to come up and investigate all those things. So there's usually feasible measures to employ, but it's definitely not excluding the ability for us to move to a lethal permit if all those measures are in place.
So would livestock be an attractant in that scenario that you're talking about?
Every incident is different, but sure. I mean, we would need to look at what is feasible to employ on each property. So one of our standard recommendations would be, for example, if somebody has goats or sheep, is to temporarily keep those in a full enclosure at night if possible. Mm-hmm. We understand that might not be possible on all landscapes, and we will work with the landowner to come to an agreement.
Any further questions?
No, it's just I think that I'm just going to voice the concerns of one of my constituents, and it's, you know, I've had bears in my neighborhood kill horses and et cetera. Their main concern isn't with you, it's with the game warden who may end up on their doorstep. Awful lot of due process for a bear. People are looking for what the due process is for them. As you know, 2 a.m, frequently a bear may break into a home. That happens with some regularity in Forks Valley, in my district, or in the middle of the night confronting a bear that's attacking some livestock. And people want to know, I guess, that they have as much due process should they have to take a direct action as do the bear.
So in those circumstances you described, that landowner is definitely covered by our encounter law.
Yeah.
So if a predator is witnessed in the act of harassing, pursuing, killing, attempting to kill any livestock or pets, or in the act of actively causing property damage, that landowner can protect themselves and their property.
And I understand that. I've researched the law, so I do understand that. But it's good to hear you say that, and that's why I asked the question. So that those that are listening and my constituents can hear that, because they're fearful that should they protect themselves or their property, they're going to be prosecuted. And we know there's bad actors too. But, you know, a funny story, people problem bears. And, people in the city don't often confront this, you know, but if I step outside my house at 2 a.m, God knows what I might confront. You know, because I have everything from mountain lions to bears to skunks and everything else that wander onto the front porch. Typically, we had a bear that was Fisherman Game was talking about here a couple years ago that broke into a home in Dunsmuir 2 times and destroyed their TV. Didn't like what was on, I guess. that's what we deal with on a fairly regular basis out here. And you well know that, but it'd be nice to communicate to the people who make up all the rules that make it more difficult to protect yourself.
Any other questions? Oh, Supervisor Ogre?
Just the other morning, here in town, kind of on the buoy, there was a bear at about 5 a.m. And both myself and my neighbor saw it. And this was right basically in my backyard. So, perfect example of what can happen when somebody lets their dog out, you know, early in the morning. So, how often do you have to get a report here in town of something like that happening and having somebody lose their dog, pet, cat, whatever it happens to be, whether they're there's a mountain lion sighting or a bear or somebody losing an animal before you guys come out and start to investigate that area or start to kind of patrol to find an animal?
I would say if we get a report of a lethal take from a predator at a house, you know, a property, we're going to respond pretty much that day if possible. It's a complex issue when we have pets, free roaming dogs. I understand that we have that on the coast as well. It is really rare for a bear or a lion to nab a early morning dog. It does happen. Those are cases where we would implement our policy and come out, do a site visit, talk with the owner, investigate what happened and gain evidence so we can move through our process.
Any
And we're definitely not going to leave you hanging. We are at increased capacity for human wildlife conflict. As Axel said, we have current biologists. This is all they do. Where before, you know, that task would be left on our unit biologists, and they're spread really, really thin. So we're trending in the right direction. We've got staff, and all they will do is work with landowners and stakeholders to help mitigate these issues for human wildlife conflict. So we have the employees, we have the expertise to be able to respond in a timely manner, definitely.
That's good to hear. So if somebody comes to me and says, who do I contact, I can honestly give them an answer to say, call your local Fish and Wildlife
Department.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And so, you guys are taking reports now and acting on it more quickly. And I can say that honestly now.
Yeah, we'll have a technician here in Siskiyou probably within 1 month.
Good.
So currently we've got one full-time in Humboldt, and we'll have another one in Shasta County. So our region is staffing up to help deal with this and provide services for our stakeholders.
Great, thank you.
With that, thank you for your presentation. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.